Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side. So raise your glass. Dave is good to be with you. I'm excited about having our special guest with us again. He's been on the show a couple times, so if you've enjoyed the conversation, you can go check us out on YouTube for the older episodes, because we did a couple of them that are still on YouTube, or you just check us out on the Catholic Man Show and just Google his name, Brandon Sheard. It's great to have you on.
It's good to be here. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah. So Farmstead Meatsmith is your game.
Tis.
That is your life. Mm-hmm. That is what you do, along with many other things. Is you do a lot of husbandry.
I do.
Yes.
I am a husband.
And you are a husband and a father, and a father with one on the way.
Yes, this is true.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Number 10.
Number 10. Thanks be to God.
Yes, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
Dave, there's something on the headphones. You sound incredibly old. Is there some kind of filter that you put on?
Or? Yeah, that's what it is. I put an old filter
on it. Sounds
like
that you've gotten a little older since last time we talked.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's a filter.
Oh, it's a filter?
Just a filter.
You look even older, but you sound.
That's also a filter. You know, you can do a lot with AI these days.
That's fair.
Trying to go for that like wisdom look.
Oh, is that the look you're going for?
Yeah, it's just I bought the filter
that is
on the App Store.
And paying off. it's happy birthday though.
Thank you.
Yes. 39.
In my 40th year.
In your 40th year.
Yeah. So on your 39th birthday, this is really your 40th.
Yeah.
My birthday is September 1st. Like, that was my 40th September 1st. But we're not going to call it that.
No.
39th anniversary of my birth.
Of your nativity.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is great.
It's good. It's good.
Brandon, what else has been going on? What else have you been up to?
You're
here in Oklahoma.
Yes, we are in Oklahoma. We are in the lovely northeastern part of Oklahoma, which is the fertile green part, which is really nice.
Yes, I was super pumped whenever we helped, as much as we possibly could, help bring you back, you into Oklahoma from the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah. Yeah, the funny thing about that whole transition was there are not two places on the planet Earth that are more different than this place and west of the Cascades in Washington State. Except that all the averages are the same. So like annual precipitation, 40 inches, both places. Average high, average low by temperature, the same.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
But the difference is unbelievable because the highs and the lows happen in apocalyptic, catastrophic events here.
Yes.
Where
we're intense.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
But another reason why I'm selfishly very excited that you're here here in the Diocese of Tulsa, obviously your family is a great benefit to our diocese, and being able to be like the more great Catholic families that we have here, we can obviously see that the Diocese of Tulsa is playing a role in the evangelization of Oklahoma and specifically in our area, because there's more and more good Catholic families that are moving here, which is always a plus. So if you're a good Catholic man and you're like, hey, where should I stake my ground?
Yeah. Like, if you like to wear a suit to Mass on Sunday, you belong in Tulsa.
Yeah, come on over. Mm.
Yeah. If you would like to wear flip-flops, then maybe you should wear a suit.
but another reason why I'm excited to have you here is because we're able to invite you over to the Catholic Man Show campout that's happening this month. And you accepted our invitation, and not only are you going to be there, but you're going to be giving a demonstration.
Yes, yes. And we should probably talk about what we're going to do with that demonstration.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I just assume that it's okay if I show up somewhere and kill an animal, that everyone was expecting that.
Right, yeah.
And usually that is the case, fortunately. But yeah, we're going to harvest a lamb. And I say harvest not as a euphemism for kill, but as a more complete word. Mm-hmm. It means more.
Okay.
We're not just expiring.
Tell me the difference.
Harvest is what you do with fruit. when they're ripe, you know? You harvest them for to eat. It is a word that has the final cause, the end, in view. And that is why you raise sheep and kill them. It is to eat them. And that is the elemental philosophical structure of all the things that I do. Sounds a little oversimplistic, but if you work back from that end, all the means make sense.
Sure. Yeah, that's one of the things I've learned, like, from you. I've learned a lot of things from you, which you have very interesting things to teach people, first of all. Like, everybody has something they can teach someone, but, like, you want to learn how to make your own food from an animal? Like, that's cool information. But how you start with the end in mind, it's always about the table, okay? Mm-hmm. So, because when you slaughter an animal, there's not a whole lot of variety in what you do. I mean, but when you butcher an animal, there are, you know, 1,000 ways to butcher the same animal.
Yeah.
And they're not right or wrong, but it depends on, you know, what are you going to do with this meat? How are you going to cook it? How are you going to serve this? Because that you have to think about those things at this stage.
That's right. And I would say those things actually guide every step up to that point, such that as a man, when you endeavor to feed your family, that's the point of the lamb. Like, you need to kill the lamb to feed your children so that they can have the physical strength to go to Mass and receive grace. That's why we kill the lambs. And to do that, you do it. It needs to taste good. Like, you need to butcher it such that at the end of the day, when you cook a piece of sheep that you husbanded and artfully killed, if it tastes well, if it tastes good, that means that you processed it, butchered it, and cut it properly. And people tend to get hung up, especially when they look at processing their own animals or trying to derive food from their own fields, upon not wanting to mess it up, not wanting to make the wrong cut or contaminate everything. And it's like, it's so much simpler than that, especially when you do things on the home scale, if you think about making it super delicious.
Okay, so the guys, we have, I think, over 80 guys who are going to be at the camp out. I think this is a record-breaking year for us, which is pretty cool. We shut it down. We typically shut it down actually a little bit, about 60. And then last year, I think I shut it down at 70. And then this year, I was like, okay, I'll open it up. Because by the time our patrons get the first right of refusal, by the time they, you know, had their first right of refusal, when I opened it up to the public, it was like, well, there's like 5 spots left. So I was like, okay, I'll go ahead and do it to 15. I think we're down. I mean, it's basically done. And so this will be the biggest year yet for us. We have several things that we are in the works of doing that we've never done before. One of them being having this class that they'll be able to have kind of hands-on experience. What should guys expect going through this process? Is it something in which they're going to just sit there and watch you do? Is it something that they're going to have get their hands bloody, so to speak? Like, what should they expect?
Yeah, I like to, you know, as much as we can with that quantity of men, I'd love to get people involved in a hands-on way, because it's kind of a thing you do learn best manually by doing it. But I think that they are going to see, they're going to witness a slaughter, a killing of a lamb. And it is I've been thinking about this recently. It is very much a manly virtue to cook. It's kind of weird that we like relegate that in our culture, at least popularly, to, oh, that's, you know, that's the female's realm. She's the cook. I think it's effeminate if a man can't cook. Like, you need to, the office of a man is to care for people and to want to care for them. And feeding them that's what you're doing. It's the most elemental act of caring for them. And so it's fun to walk guys through that process, because once you see it and once you participate in it a little bit, it becomes intelligible. And because you're witnessing the whole process from the living animal to something that you eat. And that narrative is actually really simple. It's only in the modern context where that simple narrative is broken up and fragmented into a million separate processes in 5 different states and sometimes overseas. Like, we will ship large quantities of animals to China, slaughter them there, and bring their meat back here. That's a thing that happens. It's insane.
It's amazing that that could be cheaper.
Yeah, isn't that wild?
It is.
Something's wrong.
So, for someone who has no experience with no exposure to agricultural living or, you know, this kind of thing, I could see them...
the agrarian lifestyle?
Yes, yeah. I could see them thinking like, ooh, like... you know, like if they're going to be there, if they're coming to our camp out and they've never seen this, you know, I think it's reasonable for someone to say like, I'm not sure about this. Like, how am I going to feel? But really, I think the whole process when done well, especially the way you teach it, is almost peaceful.
Yeah.
Will you talk about that for a second?
Yeah, it can be because, I mean, it's not for nothing. The scripture says that the lamb before the slaughter is silent. And that is totally up to the art of the human slaughterman. We are uniquely endowed to acquire our food, or of necessity, by art, by artfulness, unlike the beasts.
Okay, so we're out of time on Catholic Radio here for this segment. When we get back, we're going to continue talking with Brandon Sheard. You can go check out Farmstead Meatsmith. Google that. Go to farmsteadmeatsmith.com. And check out all of his work. He has a bunch of classes that we'll also talk about, and an opportunity for you guys who can't make it to the camp out. We're right back.
Do you feel like God is calling you to go on a pilgrimage? Well, for the last 34 years, Select International Tours has been leading pilgrimages to holy sites all over the world.
And you want, when you go on pilgrimages, Dave, you want to make sure you have the best hotels, you're touring with the best guides, and every detail has been addressed.
And that's exactly what you're getting with Select International Tours. So, for more information, go to their brand new website, selectinternationaltours.com. They have been a sponsor of the Catholic Man Show for a long time now. Even during the COVID pandemic, they were still sponsoring our show. A lot of other tour companies were really shutting down. These guys were consistent. So go to selectinternationaltours.com to find out more information about all the great pilgrimages they offer all over the world.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles. With Adam Minahan, our special guest, meatsmith Brandon Sheard. Just a reminder, upcoming is one of our favorite feasts here on the Catholic Man Show, the Holy Name of Mary, the great feast where we remember the good work of the winged hussars at the Battle of Vienna. So, go check out our episode on the winged hussars with Father Sean Donovan. If you've never heard about this, it'll blow your mind. It's totally great.
Yeah.
And don't forget to get your croissants and coffee on the 12th, and honor this great Christian tradition. It's one of my favorite evangelizing moments in the office. I show up with a box of croissants from like a nice bakery and put them out. Because, you know, office culture, you put out like, these are clearly to share. And people come by, it's like, can I have a croissant? I'm like, sure. Today's the birthday of the croissant. Would you like to hear the story?
That's awesome.
And people go like, that seems like a harmless... Like, sure, I'd love to hear that. And you're like, all right.
So we slaughtered a bunch of Muslims.
And so I start off with 9/11, the croissant, and the Holy Name of Mary. They're all related. And I've gotten good at telling the story like 20 to 30 seconds about how, like, you know, we were Battle of Vienna, under siege, the winged hussars. They charge into battle, invoking the Holy Name of Mary. That's why they picked 9/11, because it was the last day the Muslims were in possession of the West. And I can finish this way faster than you can eat one of these croissants.
Yeah, yeah.
Even if you're trying to get away, eating it very quickly.
It's very clear. Almost 100% of the time, these people in my office, they're like looking at me going like, this is way more than I would expect.
I did not sign up for this.
This is more than I... And I didn't... This is. I would have said no. But it's too late. They already said yes.
The ROI of this croissant is not worth it.
It's like, I don't know how many hearts are changed, but I love it.
Yeah.
Okay, so before the break, we were talking about the class that we're going to be taking at the camp out, the importance of it, like what to expect, the kind of art form of it as well. I'll let you pick up from there.
Yeah, it's the craft of slaughtering a thing. And I love the way that St. Thomas approaches it. He actually, of course, you know, talks about it in terms of science. So understanding a thing by its ends, or it's the four causes. And he looks at the animal kingdom, and they are equipped by nature with fang and claw and like their clothing, right? They're just born with it. We are not. We are super pink and helpless. But so we don't have the immediate ability to acquire our bodily sustenance. We have a different tool in order to achieve that end. And it's our reason. And art is the product of reason. And so the way that we acquire our food by our very nature, it has to be artful because it comes from reason. And so it's actually St. Thomas, I think he quotes Avicenna, who says that it is unbecoming for man to eat food that is untreated by art. And I would say,
so what does that mean?
Amen.
Like, unpack that. Like, what does it, like, yeah, what does that mean?
Because it's not just filling the tank.
Like, that's nice poetry. Yeah. That sounds poetic, but I don't really know what that means.
Yeah, I think it means, so like, if you think about the word becoming, like technically, it means it accords with your being. It establishes you in your nature. This is why we feel a little bit of shame if you eat junk food. Because it's the fear. Shame is the fear of appearing lowly. Like literally lowly on the hierarchy of being. Like if you eat like a pig, you feel a little shameful because you are like a pig. You're acting like a pig. Mm-hmm. And that is unbecoming. It's not consistent with our being as rational creatures. And as such, we are the stewards of all creation. Like all creation was obedient to Adam in his innocence, right? And then when he rebelled against God, all creation rebelled against him. And so when now we have this task of actually like artfully stewarding the lamb to the family table and in fulfillment of our nature, it's totally, this is like what we are. This is how we are the executors of divine providence of all creation. And so the way you do it with the lamb is you help the lamb fulfill its nature, which is to feed your family. There is nothing more unnatural or cruel than letting a livestock, an animal that you've raised, die of so-called natural causes and waste away through predation or like microbial degradation, which is really painful and takes forever and it's a horrible death. The best thing you can do is to harvest that animal in its prime for the family table. That is a fulfillment, not a diminution of its nature.
Sure. And you see the flourishing of the natural world when you do that, right?
Yeah.
Because that's how you build better communities. That's how you have healthier nature.
Yes, definitely. The thing that will hinder your farm or your homestead more than anything else is an extraneous creature that you don't kill. Mm.
I feel like you're judging me right now. I have like four of those.
It's so easy. It's easy to have them. And yeah, I find especially with lambs, it's very evident that you can kill that sheep in a tranquil and peaceful way. And it doesn't even look forceful.
Uh-huh.
If you are artful about it, which just means you have to discern the nature of the sheep. That is a fleeing animal. Like, therefore, if you want to keep that fleeing animal calm, do not chase it. There is no chase, which means you actually have to be very decisive, and it might even feel violent for you to manage the animal's body so that it cannot flee at all. And if you control the body in that way, that animal does not feel fear. It does not panic, because if you control the body, you control the mind of a sheep.
And, which is really true with us too. You know, there's a lot of crossover. You know, that's why we kneel when we pray. You know, like, mm-hmm. the things we do with our bodies also affect the way we think about them and you know, what they affect our minds as well.
Yeah. Yeah. We share. We have bodies too. We share in their nature.
Okay. So we'll take a live, just to recap, we'll take a live sheep and we will harvest that sheep at the camp out.
Yeah.
You will give a demonstration on how to successfully do that, how to skin, how to clean it up to where you can prepare it well for a feast.
Yes.
We'll have a fire. We'll be able to roast the lamb. We'll be able to, or cook it in whatever way you see fit.
Yeah.
And they'll be able to participate in this feast.
Yes.
Okay. So there's going to be a lot of people who are listening to this and be like, dadgummit, I'm not going to be able to, I'm not going to be there. Right. Yeah. Now we will have another really cool thing about, the camp out this year is we're hiring our good friend, Manny to basically create a documentary of the weekend.
Oh, cool.
And so he's going to be following us around basically. Yeah. And his film crew, he's one of the best. You check him out. Let Peace or Die is his documentary that he just released out. It was on PBS, had millions of views. Big time guy, big guy. Yeah. He's very high in the film world. In fact, if you're looking
for... He does a lot for Bishop Barron.
Yeah, if you're looking for a good Catholic film videographer, he's top notch. I can get you in touch with him. Just reach out to us. I'm happy to pass that along. But he's going to be there. But the guys who are not going to be able to attend, they're going to say like, okay, what can I do? Like, I'm not going to be there.
Yeah.
You have something else that you're coming up in October.
Yes. Yeah. We have. This is the thing that we do. We teach people how to do this, how to harvest animals on the backyard scale, the small home scale. So you're not dependent upon outside, unreliable, and artless processors, which tends to be the problem on the small scale. And so in October, we're harvesting some locally raised Dexter cattle as a 2-day class. And it's a lot of fun because we take our time. We fill 2 days. We have a small group of people. And I walk everyone through, about 8 people or fewer, the entire process. All I do is pull the trigger, and then I turn everything over to the students so that they can actually learn by doing. And when you see it all unbroken like that, like we were saying in that narrative, you go home capable of doing it on your own. You go home able to do it, because ultimately it is pretty simple. Especially even with beef, I would actually argue harvesting a cow in your backyard is easier than slaughtering chickens in your backyard. If I had the choice between killing 80 chickens and 2 cows, I would choose the cows. All you have to do is be able to manage the weight. And that's simple too. You just have to be able to not put yourself in the position of lifting a
just start a working
beef
out
carcass.
A lot. Just start working out.
Ooh, don't do it. Don't lift them.
Now, who do you see as the students of these classes? Are these people who are like big time homesteaders, have hundreds of acres, or what does it look like for the students?
It is so cool. Our classes are filled by everybody from all walks. So people that are looking into, that merely want to learn how to someday, get land and start homesteading and raising animals. We get a lot of those because they see that the key to good homesteading or husbandry is the ability to harvest the animals. If you have a fence jumping cow, for example, and you just have to live with that thing until you can schedule, we know about fence jumping cows, don't we? Yeah, you got to end it right away. So all walks.
Okay, and they'll go to Farmstead. FarmsteadMeatsmith.com.
FarmsteadMeatsmith.com for our October beef harvesting classes.
Awesome. Okay, so when we get back, we have Michaelmas that's coming up. We have several traditions that are going to be coming up.
Yeah.
We're going to be picking your brain on best ways to kind of celebrate those and what it looks like.
Awesome.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to Catholic Command Show. We're here with Brandon Sheard, good friend of ours, local Tulsan now. It's good to have you here in Oklahoma. Like I said, farmsteadmeatsmith.com is where you want to go. Sign up for his class for meat. Now, before we get into the topic, I do want to just let's put a cap on your meat class.
Yeah.
So, guys who are thinking about homesteading, guys who aren't even thinking about homesteading but want to learn, like,
yeah,
who for the guy who is like, listen, I'm only gonna have like I'm gonna be a city guy,
yeah,
but I'm kind of interested, like, what benefit would he have?
Yeah, it is undoubtedly the cooking. So the preparation of meat, cooking it well, is actually very simple. It is impenetrably complex in a fragmented commercial system under which we all kind of live right now. And so it is so fun. This is the thing that I always look forward to the most in the classes, is we eat extraordinarily well. We get all of our meals from the animal we're harvesting. And that simplifies everything. It is effortlessly delicious. We learn that there are three ways to cook all meat. There are three recipes. You can summarize every method under three headings, and it's very simple and extravagantly delicious. This isn't like the dumbed down version. This is the apex of flavor that it is possible to attain. So we do often even just get people in there who want to broaden their ability to cook meat and expand their delight, you know, their pleasure in the table by working with the best ingredients, the freshest ingredients, and the simplest methods.
And you go through all of that on your membership site on farmsteadmeatsmith.com. They can sign up, be a member, for monthly or annual. And you have like over 70 different videos that you go through.
Yeah.
All these different things with not only cooking, but how to harvest and how to raise. I mean, the thing about what you do that I really appreciate is, like Dave said, you do have the end in mind, but with the end in mind, there's so many different means to get to that end, that all have to work together in harmony. And the more that you can make those things in harmony, the better the better you can get to that end.
Yeah.
And so again, I highly recommend, even if you're not a guy who is a homesteader or anything like that, it's going to provide a lot of knowledge for you for things that we're going to be talking about today, such as great ways to be able to feast.
Yeah.
And great ways to be able to have community together, to bring community together, to celebrate traditions, because that's really how when people ask me about, like, hey, what's going on with Tulsa? Like, why is it that Tulsa seems to be growing? And I give two reasons. I say, one, because we have Clear Creek monks here and they've been praying for us since 1999. And for the diocese. And I think a lot of that is the fruit of their prayer.
Yeah.
But then also I think that, like, we are really focused on building community together, that we have natural community in circles of intentional Catholic families who want to get together to celebrate well.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think, Brandon, one thing you do really well in your class, which I've taken, you know, in a variety of forms more than once, is just exposure to reality. In fact, I met a guy at the homesteading conference in North Carolina this last year who became Catholic because he took your class.
Oh, my goodness.
He said he was taking your class and just like the natural law, like you're not like preaching the Catholic faith. This is nothing to do with that in a direct way. But he took your class and he was telling me this. He said, in the middle of his class, I just knew I had to be Catholic. Like, whatever this guy is, that's what I have to be. And so he and his wife both came into the church this last year. It was great story. But what I really love, and you're such a good storyteller on, is just the history behind how people have woven tradition into the food and into the feasts, especially the high feasts that make life so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Adam, you mentioned Michaelmas coming up. So that's what I want to talk about. Let's spend some time talking about different cultures who have celebrated well.
Yeah, yeah, it's really fun to look at, especially when you look at Christendom And you see that all of these feasts, you know, the biggest ones, Christmas, Easter, they are, the foods that they are serving at these feasts are, they're actually ordinary, but in light of the fasting, in light of the calendar, in light of the feast, they are extraordinary. They become extraordinary. And it's really cool to see that, like, especially Christmas is incredible in England and in France throughout the medieval period. And they even had this thing. Well, and you've probably experienced this, actually. If you go to a midnight mass, right, between the 24th and the 25th, in the calendar, you know, a priest can say three masses on Christmas Day. There's the midnight mass, the mass at dawn, and then the day mass. And then people would usually go to lauds and matins also. And you are fasting.
Which is the liturgy of the hours.
Yes, right. The liturgy of the hours, the divine office. Mm-hmm. And so...
And that would be on Christmas Eve you're talking
that's
about.
That's on Christmas Eve. And so you would think that starting mass at midnight and finishing up at, you know, 2:30, 3 a.m., and then matins, and then lauds, and then morning mass, and then another mass, that your biggest deficit would be sleep. You need to sleep. But that is absolutely not the case. And I know this from experience with lots of kids going to midnight mass. The thing you need most of all is roast goose stuffed with chestnuts and black pudding and white pudding.
If I can't get some roast chestnuts in that goose, I'm not going to make it.
It's absolutely true. You need food. You need to feast because you have fasted. And the preparation, like on Christmas Eve, people were slaughtering pigs. That's how you get black pudding and white pudding. And in France, at least, it was almost requisite that you... And so what is black pudding, white pudding? It's a sausage that is black. A sausage that is white. You had to make these two sausages.
Not actually pudding.
This is required. It's pudding because they put blood in the black sausage, boudin noir.
Yeah, but when we talk about pudding today, this ain't no pudding.
That's true. The proof is therein, though. Because the blood, it has albumin. So the blood of any animal. We'll catch the blood when we do the camp out. And that means that when you cook the blood of any creature, it solidifies like an egg does. When you cook it, it doesn't melt. It solidifies. And so that's how you make blood sausage. It is bound. It is solidified by the blood itself. And it makes a sausage that is black and extremely mild and delicious. It doesn't taste weird at all. It's really good. And so you have the black contrasted with the white pudding. And the white sausage is white because it's mostly fat. And fat is white from a pig. And you only use light-colored meats. People were meticulous about making these appropriately colored and festive sausages. Like, you can only use the breasts of chicken and the loin muscles of pigs, which are literally lighter in color. And you had to put milk and breadcrumbs and sweated onions to make this white pudding or this boudin blanc. Because it's the réveillon. I don't know how to say it in French.
Sounded good to me.
I just pretend.
Yeah.
But it's the reawakening. That's what that word means. You're coming from the darkness to the light. And so it was essential to have that Christmas goose stuffed with chestnuts and your black and white pudding for the réveillon. And that was every Christmas.
But they would have fasted all day. Is that?
Yeah.
I mean, that historically.
Well, and even through Advent too, you know, there's some fasting going on.
Sure. Yeah.
And especially Christmas Eve.
That would have been a...
Yeah.
You just don't eat.
Yeah.
Fast.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's even...
People used to take fasting a lot more seriously. Yeah. You know, today it's like, oh, well, I didn't have a snack, so I guess I'm fasting to, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like we're all toddlers.
Well,
like
I didn't have my third glass of Kool-Aid, so I guess.
I mean, it does remind me. It's like the fasting rules today. It's like, well, it's like... Oh, so we're not acting like toddlers today, I guess. Anyway.
Yeah.
But back then, it was...
The real deal.
It was the real deal, yeah. And it totally transforms your feasts.
Absolutely. I would say it is... the magnanimity of your feasting is in direct proportion to how well you fast. It's a one-to-one.
Right.
And that's where Easter eggs come from, right? Why do kids go out on Easter and search for Easter eggs? It's because you can't eat eggs during Lent. No eggs, no dairy, no meat. And you would go out on Good Friday and collect eggs on Good Friday of all days. And that those were special eggs, obviously. And you could not eat them until Sunday.
Yeah.
It was a big deal. It was huge. So just going out and finding eggs, that was like the children's chore. After not eating a single egg for so long, because eggs don't spoil, right? If you leave them out and you their bedding is clean and you don't wash them, they keep for all of Lent. They're all good. And you haven't eaten them for 40 days. And so it's a big deal to be able to make pancakes again or gâteau.
Mm.
I don't really know how to say that either, but little cakes, French cakes.
Can you tell me what the correlation between having these times with like the family pig and how it naturally brought community together and the kind of like, because sometimes when I hear people ask about how do I bring, like how do I start these communities? Like,
yeah.
I think that some of the reasons why it's hard for us to imagine now is because we're missing like the natural perspective, like the natural law aspect or like the natural way in which we used to do it. And so because we don't have that natural aspect anymore, it's hard and it almost becomes artificial to try to recreate that.
Yeah.
We're out of time right now, but on the other side of the break, I'd like you to kind of pick up on that.
Yeah. Why don't you ruminate on that?
I shall.
And we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. David Niles. We're talking with Brandon Sheard. Brandon, right before the break, we were talking about the pig.
Yes.
And the contribution that pig makes to community and to society. And taking that pig, what has to happen to take that pig from the outside to the inside?
Yeah, good question. That is the pig of all the animals that we harvest for our food. The pig is tricky. It's demanding. It requires a lot of help and skill. And it used to be, the pig has always been a backyard animal also. So it's always been the livestock of the poor, basically. You know, you could only do sheep and beef and cows if you had land on which to graze them. But if you have a backyard, you can raise a pig. And really well, like they thrive in tight quarters with lots of delicious waste from your kitchen and your garden.
Scraps, yeah.
Yeah. And so it was always a village task to harvest the pigs. And in the age before refrigeration, you just had to wait for St. Andrew's Day, November 30th in the Northern Hemisphere, or Martinmas, November 11th. When it's a refrigerator outside, and that is when you would start killing the pigs. And there were usually itinerant or traveling butchers. Some people were lucky enough to have a resident, a village pig killer. They could harvest pigs well. And this is all without firearms. So they had to deftly, you know, just stick the pig to bleed it out. And a pig is an immense harvest. It was not just, you know, hey, we like pork, let's raise a pig. It was, let's survive the winter.
Oh, yeah.
And not starve to death because the garden isn't producing, right? And so you need bacon, you need ham, you need lard. That is survival food and incredibly delicious because Providence is benevolent that way.
Yeah, you get the yield off of a pig is much higher on a proportionally than it is off of a ruminant like a cow.
That's right. Yeah, half the weight of a live cow is its guts, and then half the weight of the carcass is bone, which you can turn into broth and bone stock, but a pig is much higher yield than that, and it's harvestable in much less time. Pigs grow extremely fast, quickly. And so to harvest their pigs, it was too much for one family to consume. So abundant is one pig that it's too much food to consume before it starts to spoil. And so the strategy for preservation was simple salting. that's how we get bacon. It means back. The back of the pig was which is basically the entire side. It's all salted. There's no part of the pig you're not supposed to cure. And that's where all of the best and our most favorite pork cures come from. That's jamón, ham, you know, and bacon and pancetta and prosciutto and all the itos and the etas. And then even after that, rendering the lard, it's all preserved. It's not going to spoil. It's not going to go bad. It will keep indefinitely in room temperature. You have all the offal, and it was inconceivable to just waste the offal. Like, why would you do that? It is objectively delicious in spite of our unfamiliarity with it today. It's actually really good if you consume it fresh. It's when we freeze it that the liver starts to taste tinny and irony and gross and pasty. But if it's fresh, it's actually delicious. And so in order to seize upon that yield of all the delicious offal, that which falls off the pig is literally where that word comes from, all the guts. They would fry up the offal meats, the spleen, the kidneys, the lungs. And then they would, even that is too much for one family to consume. It's too much. That's too big a meal. The liver itself can weigh like 3 pounds. It's huge. And so the preservation strategy was to share it. And so at least in the villages in England and amongst the cottagers, so not landowners, just, you know, they had a backyard pig, maybe two, is that they would share it. So you fry up the offal, you create a simple little sauce that's basically cream and jam, so it's kind of sweet and savory. And then the children would go around with a platter of these delicious chopped up bits of offal in this sauce and with a plate on top of it to keep it hot. And they would bring it to their neighbors because that's how you preserve the harvest, is in other people's bellies during the cold time of year when that, you know, some people couldn't afford pigs that year, so they're kind of lean anyway. And it's very welcome gift to get a rich, hearty, incredibly nutritious platter of fresh slaughter day fry. And this was a Christmas thing. And they called it spreading the pig cheer. Spreading pig cheer. And the children, you know, it seems inconceivable today, but I can testify that this is true. The kids, their favorite thing is the blood sausage in the offal. This is absolutely the case. Because it is delicious when it's fresh, when you're harvesting everything together.
And, you know, they had a tradition about how to cook these things, how to prepare them, because you need to prepare them differently. You know, if you try to put a liver on the grill and cook it like a steak, and then you eat it, you're going to say, this is terrible. I mean, yeah, it's...
yeah.
There, you know, you have to use your art form.
Yes.
But the point that I love that you're making is that they use generosity as a strategy for survival.
Yeah.
Right? That this is what for... I mean, you might not like your neighbor, but you need his help.
That's true.
When it came time to slaughter this pig.
Yeah.
Because it's just a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. Done.
So it's like, hey, I'll help you slaughter your pig this weekend.
Yeah.
You'll help me next weekend. The weekend after that, we'll go help Adam.
Exactly.
You know, and we'll all provide for each other.
Yeah.
In the process.
And the relationship here between, okay, so the priest offers a sacrifice in the Old Testament, you know, like they were offering animals on the altar.
Yes.
All day long. That is hard work.
Yes.
The relationship there, what are your thoughts?
Oh my goodness. That is so deep. All of Christendom conceived as the harvesting of their animals for food as sacrifices. So that was the whole paradigm. Today we say processing.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
I'm going to get my pig processed. Totally, totally devoid of any meaning. But that was not the case in Christendom. In fact, in Spain today, the pig killing is still called the sacrificio. It's the sacrifice. That's what it is understood to be. That's the paradigm. And even in France, in the pantry, the word for the pantry is the office, right? And it's obviously not a padded cubicle with a computer.
Yeah.
But what is it? It's like the divine office, right? Which is the older word for the liturgy of the hours. It's the offering. It's the offering, such that in your kitchen you had a coron de office. I'm pretending again because I don't know how to say it, but crown of office, which was literally a crown-shaped metal rack hanging from your ceiling on which you hung chitterlings, for one, which is large intestines, and sausages to cook. So it's literally the place where you put the meat you're going to offer or immolate on your home altar, which is your stove. This is the whole symbolic vocabulary that they had, even just around their cooking. It was all sacrifice. That's how it was understood, because the analogy is unavoidable. This creature is dying that we might live. Clearly, this is an analogy of the holy sacrifice of the Mass. In fact, even priests were not permitted to participate in work that involved the spilling of blood. They couldn't do surgery. They couldn't do animal slaughter because their hands were consecrated for the ultimate sacrifice. They were set apart, right? They were holy just to offer the sacrifice of the Mass, the most precious blood. And so they were not allowed to go and do other things, to kill the neighborhood pig. A priest couldn't do that because he was set aside for
the blood,
the ultimate sacrifice.
Yeah, for divine blood.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Wow. And so, which implies this, there's obviously an analogy there, right? Like his sacrifice is here. And it's not the mere sacrifice on the natural level, but that is still a sacrifice on the natural level that gives life.
Yeah. I can't imagine though, the priests of the Old Testament, just how exhausted they would have to be at the end of the day, offering these sacrifices, like one after the other, after another. And that makes more sense even in Mass, right? Whenever the priest goes and has his hands washed, right? Because like at that point in time, he, like in the Old Testament, he was washing his hands because he had blood all over. He had he had work on his hands, and so he had to clean his hands off.
Yeah.
And so there's just so many beautiful parallels there. And I think that it also brings into not only the fact of a ministerial priesthood, but also the domestic priesthood that showcases like the effort, like as a priest, we're offered, the priest is supposed to offer prayer and sacrifice. Mm-hmm. Those are the two things, and teaching. Those are the three things in which the priest is supposed to do. Well, as fathers of our priests of our domestic church, we're also called to offer prayer, sacrifice, and teaching to our family.
Yeah.
And I find that a lot of the work that you do correlates with being able to pass on tradition and pass on ways in which you've learned things with your hands to the other person, to your children, to say, carry this on.
Yeah.
And we're out of time on Catholic Radio. We're so grateful for all the Catholic radio stations that pick up our show, and make sure you support all Catholic radio stations in your area. But we're going to continue this on the podcast. Go check us out. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus.
So I didn't have like a clear question there, but I was just hoping that based off of what I was saying, you'd be able to pick up and riff off of that.
Yeah. On tradition.
Yes.
Yeah.
You need to put your microphone down.
Passing it on to the kiddos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts?
That is.
Why don't you start with what is tradition?
Yeah. Handing something on. It's from the Latin word. Makes me sound like I know what I'm talking about. But it is. To pass on, to hand on to the next generation, to transmit. And that is. It's actually really interesting. I have to try not to get too crazy about this. St. Thomas talks about this, question 96 in book 1 of the Summa. It is wild.
I was pretty sure it's book 1, yeah.
It was book 2 of book 2, the second part of the second part. That's what you thought.
I had to look that up this morning to remember where it is, but it's wild about Adam's role in the garden, in creation. But that might be a distraction, so maybe I won't go there. But in passing it on to the kids, that is what constitutes tradition and culture. And that is, I feel like the best thing I can do to equip my sons, especially to be men, is to teach them how to feed people. Because that, I really think, I've heard this definition somewhere that's really helpful from another Catholic author who I can't remember, but a man is someone who cares for people and wants to, who takes care of people. And my sons, you know, I look at them, they're like saplings, you know, and they have branches that are starting to grow off of their trunk, and you have to put weight on that branch to thicken its connection to the trunk and responsibility to turn them into men. And the readiest source of that responsibility is their brothers and their sisters, and bearing them in kind of a parental role. And it's absolutely necessary, especially when your family gets bigger. I mean, it's totally indispensable. And so if I'm going to equip them to take care of each other and of future families, should God call them to family life and even religious life, they're going to have to take care of people. And my sons can cook for the family to varying degrees of competency. But that's okay. They can make food. Wallace can shoot a pig. He's my oldest. And my sons, they can milk cows. They can make food. And most importantly, they can feed their little sisters. And that is not ancillary, you know. Those aren't just extra chores. I think that's of the essence of manhood. They're taking care.
And, you know, I think that tradition is, you know, which has been largely abandoned. I mean, I think today we have just totally discarded the value of tradition, and we still have some, you know, and it's like kind of fun. It's like, oh yeah, it's tradition, whatever. But we have just totally lost the sense of its importance. A tradition is basically a hack. It's like a life hack. Okay, you'll spend the rest of your life trying to figure this out, or you could just do the tradition.
Yeah.
I mean, because generations have come before you. This is only a tradition because the lives of your ancestors, your father, your grandfather, your great-grandfather, all of these people figured it out.
Yeah.
This is the way. And I think for us as moderns to just be jettisoning so many of these things, it's going to, you know, it'll have consequences.
Yeah.
When, you know, it's like, oh, we've been doing this good practice for so long, we stopped doing it, right? Yeah. And so traditions in the way we harvest animals, the way we celebrate these feasts, right? Like, these are all so crucial.
They're key. And that's what's so funny about getting into homesteading, or especially meat harvesting or butchery or curing, is that you will find that they're assiduous about trying to compile data, right? And, ooh, this is what makes your bacon safe to eat. This is what will prevent botulism, right? And it's lots of data points. But there is, it's intimidating, in fact. It makes it seem like it's difficult and super volatile and dangerous.
Like you have to be a scientist.
Right, exactly. A chef in a lab coat. Whereas I hang meat in my kitchen, like at that, or in my butcher shop, in an uncontrolled temperature, humidity environment. There are no controls. It's just hanging, and it's preserved until the apocalypse, or you eat it, whatever comes first. But in spite of this appearance of precision, there's one thing that the clinical food studies fail to take into account. One essential data point, and it's tradition. It's like literally the one piece of data that has been proven to work for centuries. So you're in this weird context where you have to, you're trying to make things work by seeing if, well, you know, it works in practice, but does it work in theory? And so they're positing all these theories.
Sure, I mean, it always
theories.
Works, but in a scientific formula,
right?
We Can haven't we
critique pure reason.
Yes.
Yeah. It's totally absurd. And so meat curing, meat preservation, all the traditional methods, and there's really three. There's like fermenting meat, dry salting meat, and then confit, cooking meat in fat. They work because that's how we always did it. So there's a real sense in which the fact that we're here means that our ancestors survived these methods of meat preservation for millennia.
Right. Yeah.
They work. And yet those are the very ones that it is impossible to prove to like a local inspector if you want to try to sell that product, especially because it's unscientific and we're not sure that it works in theory.
Yeah. And I mean, and I think that a lot of people get that. Certainly there is a movement back in this direction, this, you know, the organic movement, which has benefits. I also think it has problems with it, but, you know, just like people realizing, hey, you know, we should eat good food, right? Yeah. But
maybe
I don't,
red dye isn't good.
Yeah, maybe it's like, I don't know. Huh.
Yeah.
Like, seen what it does to your teeth? But what we haven't made the connection of, okay, starting to embrace some of these traditions with our food, what about our spirituality? Mm. You know, modern man has not had that awakening. They haven't put those dots together yet.
Yeah.
Which of course, you know, as Catholics, we kind of look at these things all together. Like we wouldn't separate them all.
Yeah.
You know, when you've processed one of my cows before and, you know, the first thing we did was pray, mm-hmm. Because we're about to harvest food, right?
Yeah.
And just how all of this whole process, it's all the same, right? Like you said in the beginning, this is all about getting back to Mass.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly how it was described. Like you have to supply the goods of the body. They are instruments. They're not ends in themselves. So we can't just be complete, you know, gluttons or pure foodies. Because that's kind of easy to do, because when you start doing this, it is really delicious. but they are instruments. All of your agriculture, all of your backyard homesteading, all of your extravagant and artful bacon curing is an instrument to achieve the good life, which is to live virtuously. And to do that, you need grace. And that's kind of the final cause of it all.
I'm going to ask another question that may seem off topic, but I'm curious on your thoughts here. Is once you have the meat, once you have the
food, do you think Bitcoin is
once you have the meat and you're prepping for your family?
Yeah.
What is the significance of decorum at the dinner table when the family is there, or is that something that's superfluous? What does the dinner table say, like the preparation of the dinner table say about the family, say about the preparation, say about the whole experience that we're getting through?
Yeah, I love that, because even in, you know, like a non-religious home, you would find a hierarchy at the table. It's almost impossible to sit around a table without displaying some order. And that is where that is evinced, at the family table, because the family is the irreducible unit of society, right?
Yeah, like don't tell me you don't always sit at the same place at the, you know, like,
yeah,
obviously you do.
That's right. Well, and there's always, I mean, I've, you know, you, especially when you start growing your own food, especially when you start harvesting it, and you all sit down around to a meal that is clearly the end result of a lot of labor, of a lot of work for the family, there is always going to be a very loud silence before you dig in. And that is always the case. There is this sense that we should thank someone, even though the fruit on the table is the result of a ton of your labor. There's this weird equation that the more work you put into the meal from the beginning, the more apparent becomes its reality as a gift, because it was all harvestable. And that's what you find with animals and fruits and, you know, cultivated vegetables, is that they are put together, especially livestock, in such a way that they can be unknit. There is an intentionality. There's an order to the way a pig is put together, such that you're almost following seams. You're almost following a laid out path, an order through the pig to bring it to the table. Because ultimately, all the animals, of course, are a gift from God to sustain our life. And that is always, I mean, even in pigdom, in all levels of being on earth, the hierarchy, the order of being, even just the hegemony in a sounder of pigs or a group of pigs, it is manifested at mealtime. You see it immediately. There is a natural order to the whole thing. And that is instantiated at mealtime. That's what I love about the boar's head tradition, which is where you roast the head of a pig, usually supplied by the Lord, who in his duty to his tenants kills the wild boar, because the wild boar is a problem.
Totally.
I mean, he's messing up crops. He's threatening toddlers. Like, he is a huge, powerful, dangerous beast. He's a nocturnal beast too. So there's all kinds of parallels between him and the diabolic. And so the Lord, in service to his tenants, he goes out and he kills the boar. And he serves up the boar's head at Christmas. And you bring in the boar's head. It is borne by the eldest male child. And he intones and leads everybody in the boar's head carol, which is beautiful. You should look it up. It's a Latin and English carol. It's so fun. But it's about bringing in the boar's head to feast for Christmas. The creature of the darkness has been slain. The light has come. And we're going to eat his head.
Awesome.
Yeah. It's so triumphant.
What lessons have you learned that regard marriage and the slaughter?
Whoa.
Why don't you give some context?
Yeah,
there?
Okay. I'll flesh that out. I just think about I'm thinking about the things that I do at home and how I could never do them without the partner, without my wife. Yeah. You know, it would be inconceivable for me. I would never, I just couldn't ever achieve these goods.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's one thing to go out, kill, and butcher an animal, but the end of the table is far from achieved.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I totally agree with what you said about men being involved with the cooking.
Yeah.
The truth is my wife does the vast majority. I mean, I grill, obviously. Obviously, I'm the guy who grills because I'm a man. But what lessons do you take there?
Yeah, I think that that's a really good point. I think that what I mean by, you know, men need to cook, that means that for the man, feeding his family, that's his. So when the man dies, when the husband, the father dies, he's going to have to explain to his judge why his family didn't eat well. I mean, that's, if you can't sustain the bodily health, that is a natural good. That's really important. So you can, so you can get to Mass. So you can have a clear mind that works. So you can meditate in prayer, understand the sacraments, the theology of our church. Like there is a baseline of health that is part of aiding you to that end, right? And the man is going to have to answer for that. And so basically, like when a man is in charge of cooking, that just means everything is his fault. Everything. All of it. The dirty diapers.
Like we refer to the fall of Adam.
Yeah.
Even though Eve is the one who plucked the fruit.
It's all on him.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so at least in my household, it's very much, you know, I tend to be the one out there at the slaughter, but when you read the old accounts, the harvest of livestock, it was not just a village, but a complete household event. And so the women would take you know, they would gather the intestines from the pig. They would take them down to the river. They would hold open one end to, because that's, you don't have a hose, but you have a directional river nearby. And that's how you clean out the contents to make sausage casing. And so there was very much a sense in which the women, the housewife, were managing much of the harvest. And that is the virtue, it's a sub-virtue of prudence called economy, which is household management, the virtue of economy, which is specifically how you disperse the goods of the household, how you in an ordered and just way, disperse the yield of the farm throughout the household in a way that is not wasteful. And so my job is to bring home the bacon, literally, as the man, and then my wife can prepare it, and she does that excellently well, but totally impossible without her.
Brendan, you are in the process of writing a book, and you also have a lot of things happening on Farmstead Meatsmith with your membership. What should they be expecting? Where can they go? What can they do to follow? You have a YouTube channel as well, I believe.
Yes. You can look up Farmstead Meatsmith on YouTube, and we've got our podcast, The Meatsmith Harvest, which we publish there, as well as lots of other videos. The bulk of our instructional material on, again, provisioning the home family table on the domestic scale, like small scale backyard stuff, that is on the Meatsmith membership, where you can learn how to raise all the livestock, pigs, cows, waterfowl, poultry, everything, and harvest it on your own and cook it and preserve it traditionally. That's all on the Meatsmith membership, which you can find on farmsteadmeatsmith.com. And I hope by this time next year to have my book out, which will be on the art of raising, harvesting, cutting, curing, and cooking the noble swine in the backyard.
Mm.
Now, I did not ask you about this ahead of time, so we can cut this out of the podcast if we have to. But for those who want to join the membership site, if they sign up for an annual membership and they use Catholic Man Show as a promo code, how about they get a month free, the first month free of their annual membership? How does that sound?
That is awesome. Yeah, if you go to the farmsteadmeatsmith.com and you enter the discount code Catholic Man Show, you will get a month free on an annual membership.
Boom. How about that?
Great. Oh, what a great idea.
That's awesome. That's the art of the deal. We're just already assuming that the deal's done, and we'll just figure out the details later.
Now that everyone's here, how about we double it?
Brendan, it's a gift and a joy to be with you. It's a gift for the diocese, for you and your family. We're very grateful and excited to have you out at the camp out this year.
Me too. Thanks for having me. It'll be a lot of fun.
All right. We're on the Lord's team.
It's the winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers.